January, February, March and April, May, June, July and August, September, October, November, December. These are the months of the year. January, February, March and April, May, June, July and August, September, October, November, December. These are the months of the year.
Vayak Hail Moshe, Eskola Das B'nai Yisrael, Vayomer Alehem, Eile Hadvarim, Asher Tziva Adonai La'asososam, Sheishes Yamim, Te'asem Elacha, Uvayom Hashvi, Yihyeh Lachem Kodesh, Shabbos Shabboson, L'Adonai, Kol ha'osevo milacha yumas lo sivaru eish b'chol moshevo seichem b'yom ha'shabbos. Moshe gathered all of the people of Israel, and he said to them, these are the things that God commanded to do that you should do. Dot, dot, dot. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe v'el Aharon be'eretz Mitzrayim lemor Hachodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodashim rishon hu lachem l'chodshei hashana. Hashem said to Moshe and to Aharon in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be for you the first of your months. It shall be the first of the months of the year.
OU Israel presents
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayakel Pekudei, which is also Shabbat HaChodesh. Two Sedras and a Maftir, two Sifrei Torah, if you follow that minhag, two Kugels to serve on Shabbat. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 25th day of Adar, 5777, corresponding this year to March 23rd. We're into the springtime already, Pesach is coming, and those two go together. First, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, and then we'll get busy. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi'ya'amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi'shomerim la'boker, shomerim la'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifdeh et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzarao v'ashivya ha-omedim ebein bayam ubein bayabasha ha-makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u-meafela l'ora u-mishibud l'gu'ula Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv vinomar. Amen. Sorry about that. The opening music was the months of the year, January, February, and they were put there purposely because our maftir clearly states HaChodesh Hazeh, this month of Nisan, which is when God told this to Moshe and to Aaron. And for us, what's coming up next Tuesday, it is the first of our months. Take a correction on that. 1 second. Tuesday. Correct. So this Shabbos, we bench Rosh Chodesh. We say Rosh Chodesh Nisan Yehiyah B'yom Shlishi Haba Aleinu V'Kol Yisrael L'Tova. Now, I'm jumping in the deep end for a moment, and then we'll sort of put it together on a more philosophical, theological, I don't know what you want to call it, level. But first, a little detail. I heard a talk a long time ago, like 34 or 35 years ago, here at the Israel Center, not actually here, but on 10th Strauss at the OU Israel Center there. The talk was from Rabbi Elihu Marcus, Zichrono Levracha, of blessed memory, and it was a Rosh Chodesh program, and he spoke about the Jewish calendar. And one of the things that he said had an impact on me all these years, and I still do it, and it was about dating checks with the Jewish date rather than the secular date. So, with a room full of olim from mostly the United States and from Britain, eyebrows went up, and he said, "Oh, no, 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 you can't do this in the United States, and you can't do it in England, and you can't do it anywhere else. But in the land of Israel, in the state of Israel, the Jewish calendar is officially recognized. All banks and post offices that have calendars posted of what day is today have the Jewish date and the secular date." And he says it's perfectly kosher and legal to date your checks with the Jewish date. And therefore, every time you do that, you are, in essence, fulfilling the spirit of the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. Again, I apologize for clearing my throat. I shouldn't, because it'll be worse if I don't clear it. Okay, let's get this straight. The verse in the Maftir, which was the second reading that I did, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, this month is for you the first of the months of the Jewish year. We are taught that that verse is a command, one of the 613 mitzvot, to make a Jewish calendar and to run a Jewish calendar and to use it. I'm just adding those things. It's a topic that I love, and I could talk for a long time on it, which I'm going to try to control myself. But that statement, said Rabbi Marcus, Zichrono Levracha, means that if you date a check March 23rd, then you're bypassing HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. If you date it the 25th of Adar, then you are fulfilling the spirit of the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Kamochein, so too, came a different issue, which I saw in several different sources, and that is the use of numbers for the secular months. Everybody does. And you have your expiration date on your credit cards, and you have dates on receipts and things like that. And, as you know, today in the United States would be 3/23/17. In Israel, it's usually 23, like Europe, .3.17, same meaning. But there's a little bit of a problem if you want to get picky about it. By writing March as month number 3, you are basically going against the spirit of that verse. That verse says, this month, meaning Nisan, shall be the first of your months. Month number 1 is Nisan, not January. Number 2 is Iyar, not February. Number 3 is not March, but is Sivan. Now, I must tell you that most authorities dismiss this as anything too serious. Many of them will say, if you can avoid using numbers, then so do it. But there are sources that really put a bad spin on it. And I try my hardest never to have to use the numbers of the secular months, because I could fill in a space with M-A-R, or in Hebrew, Mem Resh Tzadi, and I don't have to write 3, and I choose not to. But these are examples of a certain nitty-grittiness, and I really want to go, beyond that, no, above that, I don't know, but differently. I want to take a different direction. First, let me say, the reason I started with January, February on the song is because I would say your average American Jew can rattle off the secular months in order without a problem. And if you ask him what are the months of the Jewish calendar, there are many who will get it right and many who will go through the list and maybe skip one or hesitate. And then there are some that don't have a clue. And the command of HaChodesh HaZelochem, even though it is officially directed towards the representatives of the Jewish people, namely Moshe and Aaron in that generation, and subsequently a Sanhedrin, still, there are elements of that mitzvah which address each of us. And I believe it is important that we should know Tishrei, Mar Cheshvan, Kislev, Teved, Shvat, Adar, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, and Elul. And to know that there are two starting points. You could start at Tishrei, you could start at Nisan. Our months are numbered from Nisan, but the year is counted from Tishrei. And we're not even up to that other issue, which I will play the secular ditty, and then we'll discuss that a little bit, still leading up to the point that I really want to emphasize. Okay, with that ditty, which a lot of people know, they know the days of the months in the secular calendar, either that way or by the knuckle counting. And if you don't know what I mean, that's okay, but if you do know what I mean, it should bring a smile to your face. But now we ask a harder question about the Jewish calendar. Not only did you get the months in order, many people could say, yeah, I know the months in order, that's easy. Okay, how many days does Tammuz have? And I don't know. Many people will not know. Many people will guess. Some will guess right. Some will guess wrong. The facts are that there are 29 or 30 days in Jewish months, never more than 30 and never fewer than 29. The months from Tishrei through the year alternate 30s and 29s with an exception. But Tishrei is officially assigned 30 days in our fixed calendar. Mar Cheshvan 29, Kislev 30, Teve 29, Shavat 30, Adar 29, Nisan 30, Iyar 29, Sivan 30, Tammuz 29, Av 30, Elul 29. The exceptions are Mar Cheshvan, which usually has 29, but sometimes can have 30. And Kislev, which usually has 30, with some years can have only 29. These are used for fine tuning and fine adjustment, the goal being to keep the calendar in line with the with the secular calendar and with the actual experience of the phases of the moon and the cycle of the earth moon around the sun, which we're not going to get into now. So you ask, 30 days hath September, April, June, and November. Give me the months that always have 30 days in the Hebrew calendar. And I think most people will not be able to say quickly, Tishrei, Kislev, not always, Shvat always, Nisan always, Sivan always, and Av always, etc., etc. So that, again, is the details, is the nitty-gritty. But I want to take a look at a lofty concept here. In fact, the combination of Vayakel and Pekudei with HaChodesh gives us a marvelous opportunity to discuss the topic. The topic is sanctifying time and space, time and place. Let's take it from the top. The opening three verses of Vayakel contain a reminder of the significance and supremacy of Shabbat. We had most recently had a reminder of such last week's Torah reading of Ki Tisa at the end of the whole presentation of building the tabernacles, the Mishkan, and it ended with a reminder that Shabbat is the eternal covenant between God and the people of Israel and how important it is. Then there was the golden calf fiasco and its aftermath, and getting back on track to the building of the Mishkan, Vayakel starts with a reminder of the supremacy of Shabbat. Shabbat represents God's sanctification of time. He created the world in 6 days. He rested on the seventh. And the Torah tells us way back in the second chapter, beginning of the second chapter of Bereshit, that God sanctified the Shabbat because of his creation of the world. Subsequently, when we were about to come out of Egypt, God says to Moshe and Aaron, representing the people, that we are to enter into a partnership with God on a further element of sanctification of time, namely the months and the holidays of the year. In other words, under the topic of sanctity of time, we have Shabbat and we have the calendar. The significant difference being that the Shabbat was basically all God's action, and we are commanded to sanctify the Shabbat sort of after the fact, that when it enters and when it leaves, we acknowledge its sanctity. Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadosho, remember the Shabbat day and make it holy. but God is the one who sanctified the day. We proudly say Kiddush on Friday night, both in davening as well as at the dinner table. And that's what we call it, where we are, I don't know what you want to say, confirming or acknowledging or appreciating and acknowledging God's sanctification of Shabbat with our statement of Kiddush, sanctification. Yom Tov is a different story, and that's the one that we get in the Maftir from the Second Torah, Parshat HaChodesh. I must remind you, not in all years do these sedras that we read match up with HaChodesh, but when they do, and I don't have the statistics at my fingertips, if I get them in the next piece of time, I will mention them to you, but I'm looking at it, the fact. This year, Vayakel and Pekudei match up with HaChodesh, and there's a lot to be said because of that. So what you have so far is the sanctification of Shabbat at the beginning of the Torah reading this Shabbat, and the sanctification of the calendar as the reading in the second Torah, the Maftir, also at its beginning. And the quick version of it is, God says, I obviously created the sun, the moon, and the earth and set them in their orbits, and you are to notice that the moon goes through its phases, where first you can't see the moon, and then there's a crescent, and it waxes, and it fills out, and then you have full moon, and then it wanes, until you have a waning crescent, and then no visibility of the moon. God made, as part of this rule of setting up the months, that it will be at first visibility of the lunar crescent. Or let's say it differently, first visibility of the lunar crescent, which happens briefly after new moon. That briefly could be 20, 24 hours. And that's what God waits for us in the time of Sanhedrin to witness and to testify, and that Rosh Chodesh will be proclaimed on that day because of eyewitness testimony. Without eyewitness testimony, there are methods by which the Sanhedrin can proclaim Rosh Chodesh, but they are not preferred. The preferred way is that we are involved actively in the sanctification of the calendar. And the sanctity, the holiness that Pesach has in little less than 3 weeks' time, comes from the fact that Rosh Chodesh has sanctity. Rosh Chodesh's sanctity gives its sanctity for any of the holy dates in that particular month. So we've got the two variations of sanctity of time at the beginning of the reading and in the Maftir. Sandwiched in between are well over 100 verses. I don't remember the number exactly offhand. I'm looking at my desk to see if I could find the stats on that. You could find it at ttidbits.com. Many, many psukim that deal with the Mishkan, fulfilling the mitzvah which we received back in Parshat Teruma of the Asu Limikdash Vishachanti Betocham, make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell among you. And that is carried out for its very first time in the Torah reading of this Shabbat in Vayakel and Pekudei. Mikdash represents sanctity of place, of space. And its sanctity is so strong on the Beit HaMikdash level, when it finally gets to Jerusalem, that even in ruin, we consider the place where the Beit HaMikdash stood and will stand again to be holy even during this interim when there is no standing Beit HaMikdash. but it's a sanctity of place. Now, we could argue and we could bring commentaries that present the supremacy of Shabbat, sanctity of time, to that of Mikdash, sanctity of place. And it shows up in certain halachic ways, the main one being that the building and construction of the Mikdash cannot take place on Shabbat. However, if you look at the functioning in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, on Shabbat, you will surprisingly find several things which are forbidden on Shabbat. For example, the ritual slaughter of an animal, and the lighting of the menorah, and the burning on the altar of parts of those sacrifices. But interestingly, you can't bring any sacrifice you want on Shabbat. Let's say a person had a grandchild and he wants to offer a korban shlamim to celebrate the birth of his first grandchild. He could do that any day of the week, but not on Shabbat. Shabbat does not step aside for just any sacrifice. The only sacrifices that take place on Shabbat are the ones that the Torah insisted be on a specific date. First, there's the tamid, which must be done every single day, including Shabbat. Then there are the musafim, the additional sacrifices of two lambs on Shabbat, which have to be Shabbat. Torah insists on it. Korban Pesach, Torah insists be in the afternoon of the 14th of Nisan, even if it's Shabbat. So those things push aside Shabbat. But as long as we're mentioning that, interesting, the roasting of the Korban Pesach, the Passover sacrifice, the roasting of it, which is the only way we're allowed to eat it, cannot be done on Shabbat. If the day for sacrificing the Korban Pesach is Friday, then you have to make sure it's done early enough to be able to roast the meat afterwards so that that night you'll be able to eat it, but you can't wait till night to roast it. If Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, that is Shabbat, then you bring the Korban Pesach and it's slaughtered and you sit in the permitted areas of Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, with the carcass of the animal until after dark, so that you could bring it home and roast it. So Shabbat still keeps its superiority, so to speak, but there are a few things which show the significance of temple service, and that, we're saying, represents the sanctity of space. Twice in the Torah we find Et Shabtotai Tishmoru Umikdashi Tira'u Ani Hashem. My Shabbat you shall keep, and my temple you shall revere, I am Hashem. And that gives a certain equality to the two. But again, I think if you take all of the details, the conclusion has to be that the sanctity of time in the form of Shabbat has a higher status than the sanctity of space. And if you want to get a little, whatever you want to call it about it, we human beings exist in space and in time. So we're talking about the total picture of sanctification of our existence. Now, there are other people who, other commentaries who write that if the Mikdash represents our endeavor to build this house that God commanded for his glory, not for his dwelling. He promised to dwell among the Jewish people, not in a particular physical structure. But you can summarize it by saying that the endeavor of Mikdash is what we do for God, and Shabbat is what he did for us. And there's a certain, you know, idea there also. I want to add something else. The sanctification of the calendar comes in two forms. When we have a Sanhedrin, it's as I described earlier with eyewitness testimony to the first visibility of the lunar crescent, and based on that testimony, the proclamation of the sanctity of the day as Rosh Chodesh. When we don't have a Sanhedrin, which we haven't had for over 1,000 years, then we have another system which was prepared for us by a Sanhedrin of old, which is mathematical. The mathematical system functions without anyone having to say, is the moon in the sky or not? It doesn't matter. It obviously is going to be visible roughly around that time. But it's not based on eyewitness testimony. It is based on a mathematical formula. And therefore, we have a little bit of an irony here. The system, when we don't have a Sanhedrin, is neat and not subject to human error. But the system, when we have a Sanhedrin, is less efficient because human factor plays a role. Take the most obvious example. You can calculate from today till tomorrow that the moon is visible now, but if it's cloudy in the sky, you can't see it. And if you can't see it, knowing that it's there is not going to do anything. You need to be able to see it in order to testify. You can't say, I testify that I calculated that the moon should be visible, but it was too cloudy. That's that kind of thing. Furthermore, when Sanhedrin proclaims a day based on testimony, it is possible that it could be flawed because maybe the witnesses didn't see what they were supposed to see but knew what to answer the questions, and it came out like that. But it doesn't matter because once the Sanhedrin proclaims a day as Rosh Chodesh, that's what it is. There's a medrash or something that the heavenly angels asked God when Rosh Hashanah was. And he basically said, don't ask me, ask them. He turned over the calendar to us. The verse that commands it has the word lachem, you, for you, twice. And there are other verses also that show that it's our action. Now, there's another irony in all of this. When there is a Sanhedrin, and when a potential witness wants to come to Jerusalem to testify before the committee of the Sanhedrin, if it happens to be Friday night, then he's allowed, maybe more than allowed, he's obligated to get into his car and drive to Jerusalem on Friday night in order to testify. So you sort of raise your eyebrow again at that, and I'll make it more eyebrow raising. The Sanhedrin has all of the astronomical data available to them in order to determine whether the moon is visible or not, and in order to intelligently question the potential witness as to what he saw, or to what he says he saw. Furthermore, the witness that I'm talking about, a fellow who lives up in Kiryat Shmona, who spotted what he thinks might be the first visibility of the lunar crescent, but it was there one moment and gone the next, and he really is not sure what he saw. He travels on Shabbat to Jerusalem, obviously if it's the right night and the right month that you're allowed to do this in, which is Nisan and Tishrei, in order to, and the time of the Beit HaMikdash could be on any month because of the Korbanot. He's coming because he thinks maybe he saw something. The judges will question him because they know for sure what could have been seen, but since they didn't see it, they can't testify either. And yet, that pushes aside Shabbat. And since our only other experience of pushing aside Shabbat is a life-threatening situation, we sort of scratch our head at this and say, is this on that level of importance? And the answer may be, yes, it is, not on an individual basis, but on a national basis. Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael, the people of Israel, have a unique calendar. A calendar that belongs to us. A calendar that is formed from the experience of coming out of Egypt after years and years of slavery. The formation of the Jewish people from a large family group into a nation took place in a process way from Yetziat Mitzrayim, coming out of Egypt, crossing the sea, and the Sinai experience, revelation at Sinai. That's what made us into a nation. And here, before we became a nation, God commands us to set up a calendar. And that calendar, each month and every holiday within the months, is the life force of the Jewish nation. You know who knew this? The Greeks. When they oppressed the Jews before the Hanukkah story, they had, or they took measures to strip the individual of his Judaism, to wrench him away from his faith and his observance of mitzvot, by banning circumcision, by banning the Shabbat. And the Greeks attempted to destroy the fabric of the Jewish nation by banning Kiddush HaChodesh, the sanctification of the month. That's how important it is. That's why, on a little token level, I say we should date our checks when you're allowed in Hebrew. We should know the Hebrew calendar. We should observe Hebrew birthdays. I'm not suggesting you stop observing English birthdays. My family, we grew up observing both, and better than both, the period of time from one to the other. So sometimes we had a 3-week birthday period because my Hebrew birthday came out in the end of April, and my English birthday, secular birthday, whatever you want to call it, came out mid-May. And that's the way it goes. Sometimes they're a couple of days apart. Sometimes they actually coincide, in which case it's a special day because they're both on the same day. But then you only observe it for a day. But you get the point. We need many different reminders of this precious first mitzvah to the people of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. On the big level, it's setting up the calendar. On the big level, it's the Sanhedrin's task and whoever is involved. But on the little levels, on the token points, we have got a lot of opportunities to act within the spirit of this very precious mitzvah. We'll be getting into Pesach probably next week's show and the week after, if I have to check the calendar here. This one is before Vayikra, and then another one, Shabbat HaGadol. So we have two shows before Pesach, and we'll focus on those mostly. I want to now finish off with an idea, two ideas rolled into one, or two ideas not rolled into one, but that come from the same situation. Many people know that in Parshat Terumah Tetzave and the first third of Ki Tisa, we had the command with full details of building the Mishkan. In Vayakel and Pekudei, we have the description in full detail of the actual command that's transmitted to the people and the carrying out and finally setting into motion that Mishkan in the first place. Actually, the book of Shemot ends where Moshe was not able yet to enter the fully constructed Mishkan because a heavenly cloud covered it. And Vayikra, next week's reading, is when God calls to Moshe and you proceed with the book of Vayikra, which is mostly about the functioning in the Mikdash, in the tabernacle, in the temple, whatever you want to call it. I prefer to call it Mikdash because, A, that's the Hebrew term, and it includes the temporary structure of the Mishkan and the more permanent structure of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so the question, the obvious question, is why full, excruciating detail of everything that was in the Mishkan between the earlier Sedras and the later Sedras? And the simplest answer is that we need to look at the background of each presentation of the Mikdash. The first background, starting with Truma, the background is Exodus from Egypt, crossing the sea, Song of the Sea, coming to Sinai, receiving the Torah, and then being commanded to build a Mikdash. The background on the next time that it's presented in this week's Vayakhel and Pekudei, the background is the sin of the golden calf from the middle of last week's Torah reading. Big difference. So I will share with you, as I am sure I have in the past, but I'll get to that new point also, the mashal, the analogy or parable that to me says it. Parents of a teenage fellow decided his birthday is coming up. They're getting him his own iPad loaded with apps that he'll be able to really, really have a good time. And they buy it, and they put it in their closet, all gift-wrapped. And they wait 2 weeks' time till his birthday. 1 week later, 1 week before his birthday, they get a summons to the principal's office in his high school. And they show up at 9 o'clock the following morning to hear the devastating news that he is doing poorly in school. He's being disruptive. He's certainly not living up to his potential because they know that he has that potential. And things need to be rectified. The parents look at each other. They turn to the principal. You have any idea? So the principal said, I was thinking about it, and I think what could work is if you were to get your son the newest iPad with some great educational applications, and this way he will not resist because the iPad is so attractive. We're talking about the latest, of course, with all the bells and whistles. And they said, this is amazing. We already got an iPad. It just needs now some new programs, maybe, but we're all ready to go. So they come home and they tell the kid about their visit with the principal and the suggestion that they get an iPad, and they present him with the iPad. The shame of it is that when he first hears that he's receiving an iPad, it follows the results of the meeting, the report of the meeting with the principal, and that colors the way he views the iPad. They need to tell him, you should know 3-4 weeks ago, before we had any inkling that you were not behaving properly in school and performing well in school, we bought you that iPad. And look at the apps that we loaded into it, and you'll see that it was not primarily because of your misconduct in school. That came later. It was there as a sign of our love for you. Now, for those who like to pick at Mishalim and pick him apart, don't. I think there's enough merit to this one, but I don't know if it'll stand up to the scrutiny point by point. But this is what we have. We have the first account of the Mikdash with all of its details in the Sedras of Teruma Tetzaveh and the first third of Kitisa. And in that original generation of the wilderness, the people had no clue yet what this mitzvah was. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is one school of thought, Moshe Rabbeinu ascended Mount Sinai after that day of divine revelation and the Ten Commandments, and he spent 40 days and 40 nights, at the end of which he was to bring down the stone tablets engraved by the hand of God, by the finger of God, with the Ten Commandments on them. And during the 40 days and 40 nights that he spent there, he learned from God himself all the mitzvot of the Torah and all of their detail, which he needed to transmit, some in writing, the Torah, and some orally, the oral law. So anything that's written in Teruma Tetzaveh in the first third of Kitisa was not known to the people of that generation. Vayakel and Pakude, that's when they were told, after Moshe went back up Har Sinai and came down again on the first Yom Kippur with second set of Luchot, having already smashed the first set, and with the divine message of forgiveness, and with this lofty task of building the Mikdash. So, however that generation handled the situation, we need to see something. Because whatever they experienced in their lives in the Midbar is different from the way that we are introduced to the mitzvot of the Torah. We have the full Torah. So we have Parsha Teruma Tetzaveh and first third of Kitisa, and we see the command, and in our mind's eye, we imagine God speaking this to Moshe, but people not knowing about it yet. But we do, because we read the Torah every year. So it's a different perspective. So for us, like with the student in my story, where he needs to be told by his parents at some point that they bought this before there was any trouble at all. And it's not just because he's failing or disruptive that he's got the iPad. He got it as an act of love from his parents. We receive the command. Again, this is one school of thought. We receive the command of Yasuli Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Tocham, because God was sealing his covenant and his relationship with the Jewish people by commanding us many things, including the Shabbat and including the building of the Mikdash and the function in the Mikdash. The fact is that the people didn't know about this until after the devastation of the sin of the golden calf, means that for them, this came across as purely remedial. It was a tikkun. You guys messed up with gold. Take gold now and make a menorah, and light the menorah every single day, and plate the aron with it, and put the luchot into the aron, and plate the shulchan with gold, and have golden shelves, and put on lechem hapanim, showbreads, 12 of them every week. And everything that focuses on the use of gold in the Mikdash was meant, from this point of view, to be a tikkun, a repair, to hopefully receive forgiveness and atonement for the Chet HaEgel. But the command, at least in the way that it's presented to us in the Torah, predated Chet HaEgel. And that says to us a lot also. I think I'm going to call it now for the show. We've got sanctity of time, sanctity of place, sanctity of place or space, sandwiched into two sanctities of time, the distinction between them, and the concept of which background. And because we need both backgrounds on the building of the Mikdash, we have full details, Truma Tetzava, first third of Kitisa, full details, Vayakel Pekudei. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, L'Hishtameah.